and welcome back to the How to Be Good podcast, the show where we interview people and businesses that are looking to combat climate change and live a more sustainable life. I'm Gareth Barrett, and with me is...
Anka. Hi, everyone. Today we're talking about the Great Green Wall, and we've asked this question on our Instagram page. Not many of you knew about this project, and this is a great opportunity for everyone to learn about it. It's an amazing, amazing project. If you're interested in learning a bit more about it after watching or listening to our episode, please go to the Great Green Wall film and also watch the Years of Living Dangerously Out of Africa episode, and you'll learn about the migration, the African migration to European countries and the cause of that. Hence, this project that we're talking about today is really, really, really important for all countries involved.
Yeah, it's a huge undertaking, this project, and it's a massive idea. That one of those ones that sometimes you think is too big to actually action, but they're doing it, and it started, and it's what's more than started, it's proving results, which is amazing.
It is. And today we have Birgi Lamizana. She's a senior project officer for UNCCD, and that's the organization that's dealing and handling and managing the project. Let's welcome her to the show.
Absolutely. Let's listen to the show.
Welcome to How to Be Good podcast. Today we have Birgi Lamizana, senior project officer for the UNCCD, which is United Nations Convention to Combat Desertification. How are you?
Good, thank you.
Thanks for joining us. We've been really looking forward to this interview. We have a lot of questions. We've watched a couple of documentaries on the Great Green Wall, and hence the interest in interviewing yourself and finding out a bit more.
So, at the start, I guess, could you take us on a little journey of how you came to be in the position you're in now?
Thank you. You know, I'm from the Sahel region, and I have witnessed really the degradation of our ecosystem. Indeed, most of the bosk, the streams where I used to be playing and swimming when I was a kid, has really disappeared by the time I finished my university degree. I was also very accurate on the water scarcity this region was facing, because sometimes we will walk kilometers and kilometers to get just some water, and not even a potable water, because it's a water we are taking from the ponds and from some streams. So I said, why not do an engineer degree on water resources management so I can fix this problem? So I went on to do this engineer degree. But by the time I finalized, I realized this is not really single angle to solve the problem. So after 5 years on working with dams and boreholes and still facing the same situation, I shifted a bit my gears and went to look into wetland management, dry land restoration, working with some big NGOs. But on my private time, I'll also engage in restoration in the northern of Burkina, where I'm from, using local species so that at least I could regenerate them. So it's how it comes. I must say that I was really fortunate to be able to work on at a kind of normative level, helping countries to shape some policies on integrated water resources management, but also working with the communities, the involvement, how they could improve their livelihood. So, and get really my hands and feet very muddy. You know, when you are in a wetland, you know the wetland when your feet is in that and your hands is kind of not clean at all. So it's how I really started. So after more than 20 years, the lottery went to be done, and I'm really very grateful that I could contribute to this Great Green Wall initiative with helping UNCCD mandates, and particularly the countries which is really in need. So it's where this is the, in short, my journey, and looking forward to contributing to all the Sahel initiatives and seeing how we could at least mitigate or reverse the trend, because it's really accurate.
What I'd like our listeners to be able to understand is, what's where you grew up, what did it look like? What where was it about? You've got lots of, some people are living in town, some people living in small villages, some people living in farming communities. And I was trying to get an idea of where it started, because you said it's gone and it's already started to change.
Yeah, I grew up in a city, but I was always going back during holidays to my village. And when I'm there, I have the same age group where we will go out, we will go to streams, we will go to the bosque and play. But by the time I grow up and when I'm going back, because each year I'm going back, but each year I'm seeing some changes, like the streams start disappearing, and some bosque where from a small village to another, when we were very small, it's like even scaring to go through this bosque to another village. But all this has cleared up. Now you can, from one village, you can see the other because the bosque has disappeared. So I have seen it in my own eyes. So you see it disappearing with the help of, not the help, but due to population encroachment, but taking also some firewood. But due to climate change, the rainfall has been reducing. So I think that, but at that time, I couldn't give this answer. I couldn't say that it's that. I was just seeing that the change is happening just in front of my eyes.
So on the 17th of June, we celebrated Desertification and Drought Day. We would like to help to raise awareness on the locations most hit by desertification and drought, with the highest levels of drought affecting communities and wildlife at large. Can you please talk about the areas that you're aware of that are most affected by this?
Yeah, thank you. In fact, yesterday was a big day, big celebration. And it's a big theme also, because it's a very accurate challenge and problem. Desertification is a worldwide problem. You cannot just pinpoint one continent and say it doesn't have desertification. This problem affects directly 250 million people and third of the Earth land surface and over 4 million of hectares. So the livelihood of some of 1 billion people would depend on land for most of their needs. And usually the world's poorest are the ones which is really suffering the most. So the desertification affects Africa the most, but you can say that, where 2/3 of the continent is desert or dry lands. And it's not a problem just confined to dry land in Africa. Over 30% of land in the United States is affected by desertification. 1/4 of Latin America and the Caribbean is desert and dry lands. In Spain, just nearby, 1/5 of the land is risk of turning in desert. So the growing severity of the threat in the Northern Hemisphere is also illustrated by severe droughts. Water scarcity in Southern Europe, for example. In China, let's go back to Asia. You will see sand drift and expansion of desert taking toll nearly 700,000 hectares of cultivated land. So 2.35 million hectares of rangeland, 6.4 million hectares of forest, woodlands and shrubs worldwide. So some 70% of the 5.2 billion hectares of dry land used for agriculture are already degraded. So I'm giving this figure just to say that it's not a problem specific to one continent, to a poorest or to richest or to developed or underdeveloped countries. It's a global problem we are facing.
We watched some documentaries on water scarcity and drought in the States, and also, as you said, in Latin America and so on. There's definitely not just an African problem. It's all over the world, and I think a lot of people have to learn about it. This is not an information that is shared often, So the more we share the message, the more people will learn and do something about it.
Absolutely. Could you tell us a little bit about the Great Green Wall movement and what it aims to achieve?
Yeah. The Great Green Wall is a Pan-African initiative which aims to restore sustainably managed lands in the Sahel and Sahara region in order to address both land degradation and poverty. This is not a new idea. The idea germinated on the 18th by the first late Thomas Sankara, who was the president of Burkina Faso, my country. And this idea, after his death, was taken up by heads of states. And in 2005, at one of the heads of state conference held in Ouagadougou, also in Burkina Faso, the former president of Nigeria, Chief Olusegun Obasanjo, also picked up the idea and reinvigorated it. But we had to wait till 2007 that the president of Senegal, Abdoulaye Wade, pick it and make it really to be endorsed by the African Union through a declaration. And Declaration 135-8, which was now adopted and then approved the creation. So it has taken decades and decades from the simple idea to the adoption to the real implementation. People might say it has been taking long, but for me, it's like just a great idea might kind of get buy-in, be, get ownership from all the others. Then when it's start, the momentum is already there. So this Great Green Wall, if you look at now, because it was before the 2015 Sustainable Development Goal, but if you look at the Great Green Wall, what it's aiming to achieve, it's really contribute to 50 out of the 70 UN Sustainable Development Goal. So it was well thought through. And it's aim to grow green job. So if you look at the SDGs, you will see where it's linked to. Providing decent work to young people on the continent, where 60 million are set to migrate to Europe, and we all see in the consequences. To grow food security for 20 million people who go hungry every day. So you can also ping pong that if land is degraded, you cannot harvest what you want. You cannot really feed the people on that. It's also grow drought resilience in face of the total crop failure, because when you restore the lands, it's not the trees or the shrub or the grass root you are planting, but you are also helping regenerate the soil and make it more fertile and more adaptive to crop production. It's also help us grow through the renewable energy, because this is a very holistic view. It's not only if you provide, you restore land, you provide opportunity for job, and you provide opportunity for food production. If you don't provide opportunity to for an electricity, just to reduce the food loss or to improve the food conservation, you have done the problem maybe halfway. So it's also working to contribute to this one. So if you look at it, it's really, we like our mantra saying that growing the world wonders. And if you look at it, it's a symbol of hope that humanity can fight back against climate change. So it's not a fatality. We can reverse the trend. And we are looking to work with everyone on that. So to sum up, the Great Green Wall Initiative is well into its second mandate already. I thought about the germination late 18th, the idea till the one now it's updated in 2007. But now we are well into the second decade, and we are receiving now growing international attention. meaning that the attention didn't fade up. It's really growing up. If you look and think about the One Planet Summit last January, where commitment was reaffirmed and pledge was made by several countries to really contribute to this green world. So it's not just planting and growing trees and plants. It's really transforming the lives of millions of people in the Sahel. So in a nutshell, this is what we are, you can see, or the picture we want to paint, to paint outside there of what is the green world when it's come to it.
So the it's going to traverse across roughly 11 countries. Can you give us an insight into how it was and is to try and bring all these countries together for one goal?
Yeah, let me go back again to the idea and the fact that this is the African dreams of the green world is really back. It's really old. And when you see, I don't know if you remember the vast desertification, drought and famine on the late 1970s in the Sahel region, where you see vast swaths of fertile land of the region disappearing, people, the nomadics, losing all their chattels, all their livestock, hunger and famine on these countries where they didn't sow, they didn't harvest, they have nothing to eat. So I think since then, the idea of how to make it not happen again was in the head of the states, in the head of the leaders. But since the this ones of lush, of verdant region, I told you about my own growing in this region where I could swim everywhere. It was green. I have some ponds. I have some streams where I could go. There are some bosques where we could go and hide. And today, nowhere to be seen. So for generation which has supported millions of livelihoods, turn increasingly dry and barren due to the combination of climate change, population growth, and sustainable land management practices, firewood harvesting, let's say it, because we don't have alternative fuel and alternative energy. It's why energy part is very important in this matter. So all this combination affect really the poor, affect the population. You can also look at the region, say that it's a region where you have a huge acceptance. So overgrazing is one of the problems. So when all this changes and you see the degradation and you see that you had wealth because in this part of the region, your wealth is measured with the number of the heads of chattels, of cows, of horse, of camels you have. So if you see them, it's your saving. It's where you put your bank. It's not at the bank in the like we have now. But when you are wealthy, the ladies will buy golds and silver, but the head of states will buy cows. So the more you have the big chattel, the more you are respected and the more you are wealthy. So if this vanish, we have seen families where people just commit suicide. So suicide with that at this period. So the Great Green Wall now has, when you it started, was like, okay, how can we go about it? We have seen this change. Our head of state has come together with this bright idea. We have the political will, but how could we do? Because without sufficient productive land to grow food or sustain decent life, a spiral cycle of poverty quickly emerged. And over the year, this has fueled several food, water shortage, which I mentioned earlier on, recurrent conflict on the occupation of space and land between what we will now call the agriculture and the herders. But all this is due because of the land has been degraded. The area where they were cultivating, you cannot cultivate anymore. the area where the herders and nomadic were having their shepherds cannot no longer be because there are no grass, there are no water. And if you have a huge herd of livestock, you need where water and grasses is. So conflict emerged between the communities. Massive unemployment, because if you at least you produce from your land, you can sell during the dry season. You go to the market, from market to market, to sell your crops, to sell what you have harvested. And life is good. But if you have nothing to sell, you migrate to the town. So you come and put health, growing areas where peri-urban areas which was really not made for people to come and grow because no infrastructure. They are moving from worse situation to a worse situation with the feeling to improve their way of living. So it doesn't. So it's why when the 11 countries which came together to adopt Great Green Wall initiative, they look at the long solution. How do we come together to halt the advancing of the Sahara? Because you are seeing the dust storm coming, you are seeing the vegetation disappearing, you are seeing the unproductivity of land. How do we do? So it's what make that the political will is there. But even if it's going to fade, the community and the way they are living remind you of the importance to continue focusing to make it happen. Because you can travel, go everywhere, but if you go back and face the situation, you remind that you have a role to play. You have to make it happen because it's not a kind of fancy initiative for just having some greens elsewhere, but it's there to fulfill a purpose. It's there to halve a problem. It's there to help the community. So it's not even for the president themselves or the countries, but it's even for the world because this population, when they migrate from the rural villages to come to the town, if they didn't find job, the first thing they do, they migrate to another country. If nothing is happening, they cross the sea, and we are seeing most of them dying in the Mediterranean Sea. I'm not saying that this is the only cause, but it's a main cause of migration. And if the root cause is not addressed, it will still continue. So it's why you see that despite you will find some conflicts or misunderstanding or little political friction between the countries, but when it's come to this initiative, we are all together, united for it to happen.
So how would you say that this change in the fertile land is significantly due to climate change?
You can say so. But when you look at land degradation, it's really a crisis of mammoth proportion. 65% of African land is currently degraded. Yeah. I'm not the one saying it, some studies. This jeopardizes the livelihood of nearly two-thirds of the continent population. So it's not only the Sahel band, but larger. When you consider that 80% of Africa's economy depend on climate-sensitive natural resources, because the agriculture is not based on drip irrigation or any type of technology irrigation, mainly based on rain-fed irrigation. So if the land is not productive because of the lack of cover, if the rain is reduced, then you barely harvest. You start understanding then the implication because it's a kind of cycle. And when you have the climate change, you have the land degradation, you have less trees and less enabling environment to make the rain as it has to used to be, because the rainfall also reduces. So when one of the main cause of this land degradation is, as I mentioned it earlier on, and sustainable agriculture. People will find a land, they will clear it before they will plant anything, millet or sorghum or maize. Next year, they will leave this one or they will expand because maybe the family has expanded. We are a very big family, sometimes 5-7 children. So maybe what you have harvested is not enough. So you will clear another woodland to expand your productivity. So unless we get to produce more food with less land and less water, because this also is linked to water, you can have the land extended where you want, but if you don't have water to, it's a combination of both, you will not harvest. This land degradation causes direct economic cost, for instance, the form of high food prices. So it's really a cycle, as well as socioeconomic impact in terms of loss of ecosystem services. Sometimes when I was a kid, sometimes when you go to play in the bush, you don't even come back for lunch or anything because you have a lot of fruits which you can eat. You harvest, you eat there, you stay there. You don't look at what mommy had put on the in the for you, because you have no timber product. You have wild fruits which you really can harvest. And we all know where to find it. So the global economy, it's really, when you look into that, it's not only the millet or the cereal you are harvesting, but it's a combination of ecosystem services, no food that product, wild fruit. All this has been lost, and it's really linked to the climate change. It has been estimated that 6.3 to 10.63 trillion US dollar, which is the loss of the ecosystem services due to land degradation. It's equal to about 10% of the global gross domestic product. So the people in the Sahel of Africa, we live on land. So it's what, maybe I'm repeating myself, but we live on rain-fed agriculture, we live on harvesting. So if land is degraded, you lost everything.
Exactly. One of the greatest climate change injustices is the migration of the population from affected areas. And we've seen migration of this type throughout the globe, not just in Africa. We know that Africa has been hit by this massively and massively affected. And although sometimes it's masked by other sociological events, it's really climate change that's driving these people to migrate to other countries, move to towns, risk their lives and so on. We have seen many, many documentaries and news programs and so on the amount of people affected and how they risk their lives to just look for a better place. Can you describe to us, firstly, how these changes affect the local population? And secondly, how are the receiving countries affected by the increase of immigrants from the African countries?
Yeah, this is a very... not timely, but a kind of sensitive issue because, and it's a, for me, it's a cycle. And I mentioned it earlier on. You see the population, million of people in Africa, mostly they are youth. And these youths, if they are facing an uncertain future due to what you called lack of job, continuous loss of livelihood due to land degradation and failing yield, so they don't have, the land is not, is improductive. So if this is what I'm saying the root causes, and if we don't act, frustration will boil over. It's boil over, some will migrate to town, maybe within the same country, or to a neighboring country, or to a even another continent. The ones who didn't migrate will engage in conflict. And we have seen most of youth engagement in conflict, in terrorism, in these countries. Because what they're looking is, where can I get something to change my life? No matter what I will be doing, I'm not even thinking of the consequences or the bad thing I'm doing to my own communities. Yeah. I'm looking of where can I get a sense.
Security.
Yeah. So it leads to the migration. It leads to insecurity. This is really not only when we look at the migration, I'm not just saying that this is the only cause of migration. There are other root causes, but this is one of the main which we can tackle. Because if we restore the land, at least we will give a means of productivity, a means of living, a green job to this youth, and we can reduce the problem. You ask now how this is impacting the country or the within the country and also the country where the receiving country is. I think it's all within the country already. It's if you have a setting of having a rural and urban without kind of interlinkages between rural urban interconnectivity, and you have massive youth coming to the city where they are not a security, because it's not kind of saying that if you come there you can get a job. You go there, you sit to fight a job. And it will just lead to insecurity. It will lead to how this country and this national government will manage now in terms of water, in terms of school, in terms of health. So it's put in imbalance on how you will develop your country, on how you will provide the well-being of your own population. Now, if this youth leave the country and the continent, it's a loss. It's a big loss for Africa. It's a big loss of the country where, even if you look at Afghanistan or other countries where you have some migration also, it's a loss for these countries. Because it's the youth, it's the people who normally are seen to be vibrant. It's the people who are there normally to develop the future of their countries. It's the future leader, it's the future entrepreneurs, it's the future people who can bring the change. If these people leave the country or the continent, it's a big loss for these
And it's
countries.
Also, I guess, a loss of culture as well.
As well, you are right. Loss of culture and loss of everything, because when you leave, meaning that you are frustrated, you are not getting what you want. But the receiving countries also will have some consequences on coping with the unexpected flow of population, coping on how to integrate them, sometimes with different cultures, different way of living. Sometimes it's the youth will come from the village, has no degree. So how to really fit in to this new society. So it's both. It's the living, the losing continent and the receiving continent are both facing some challenges.
It's the breaking of families as well. Families that traditionally lived in a very strong unit, all of a sudden that's the youth are leaving, and that family's stopping at that point. And will, as happens, the elders will eventually die and there'll be nobody filling their roles.
You said it all, absolutely. Absolutely. If you go and kind of look back in the impact or the impact of this, it's huge. It's not only economic. It's not only linked to ecological side. It's social, cultural, religious way of living. It's all embedded there. So that's why it's really important to not look at it in there, but address the root causes of this.
So we've talked very extensively about, I guess, what the problems are, what the causes are. So the project's been going quite a long time, certainly since initial inception. What are the wins? What is now starting to change? What wins are you seeing? What land is getting better? And are there people now wanting to stay because their future's looking brighter in certain areas? Could you describe some of those?
Yeah, sure. It's good to turn to the light, to this dark table, dark painting we are putting there, because there is light and there is hope. And if you look at the Sahel region, it's really a region of hope and opportunities. So if you are linked to the Great Green Wall, you will see people fighting back. It's why this idea germinated and took place, and now well into the second decade, with the aim to really restore 100 million hectares, create 10 million jobs by 2030, so in alignment with the SDGs. And already you will see that a lot have been achieved. At the political level, there is a huge commitment and reaffirmed engagement for all the head states and all the continent, but not only the continent, it's really the international community. If you look and go back to the One Planet Summit, you'll see that the engagement is beyond the African leaders. If you look into country by countries, you will see that in Senegal already more than 12 million trees have been planted. You will look into Ethiopia, we'll see that 15 million hectares have been restored. So, but this is a very tiny, because it's only 80% of what we call the wall. I like to call it the mosaic, which is estimated to be completed. So it's why when you see and you look back in January, when everyone say, we are going, we are moving, we know that we have to do it, but we are going very slowly. Let us accelerate. So that's bring the accelerator with the pledges, with the mandate given to UNCCD to come up with monitoring, tracking the pledge, the financial pledge, but tracking all the small project and initiative on the ground with the label Great Green Wall. Is it helping to make the change? Because there are a lot of money has already poured in this region. So the accelerator is there to help us monitor and make sure that this money pledged, because sometimes it's pledged, that it's really allocated, is tricked down to the communities who really need it, and action to change and mitigate the real causes have been taken. So this is another level of this accelerator.
Yeah.
And when you look at when it will be completed, the Great Green Wall will be bigger than the Great Coral Reef Barrier.
Yeah, the Great Barrier Reef.
Yeah. And it will along, like, if you look at 8,000 kilometers of just green mosaic, which is have not only trees, but jobs and beneficiary and complex multi holistic projects, you will see the changes. So yeah, there is hope and something is happening. And more importantly, this initiative is not only now for the head of state, for the big conferences, but you see the appeal from the private sector, from the civil society, trying to see how can I contribute? If I contribute, can I have a return of investment? Because we all know that the species from the Sahel and from this region have a lot of value. So they're engaging in value chain nutrition. Let me just tell you the baobab, because if I look into how I grow up, we, in my community, we use the baobab from the trunk, everything. Mm-hmm. We use the trunk for making the ropes. To pull water from the wells, but also to to teach our nets where we sleep, mm-hmm. or the huts where we stay. We use the leaves 365 days a year for the main source for our main meal. We use it dry, we use it fresh, the baobab leaves. We use the fruit to replace the sugar. It's now I'm seeing a lot of the big company like Aduna working on Fonio, but this is what I grew up with. You have a small flue, they will give you a baobab fruit mixed with a small water. You drink it, it's full of vitamin C, and you are good. So, and now private sector are realizing this and going down to see how can I make how can I help a label and have the value chain of a baobab, of a fonio, of a moringa. So there is a lot of interest from both the civil society and the private sector. And that's make me very optimistic, because if a private sector see a return of investment somewhere, they will build sustainability, not only for the community because they care about the community, but they care about their business being sustainable. So I think it's a win-win situation.
Absolutely, absolutely. Mm-hmm. So with the project, is there a lot of local people in the areas getting fully involved in the project as well? So people on the ground?
I can say yes, because you know this, when the Great Green Wall has been initiated, an agency has been created, the Pan-African Great Green Wall Agency, which is located in Nouakchott in Mauritania. And national Great Green Wall committees has also set up in all the different countries. Just so that you have a regional body, but you have also the national body who will work with local communities, because they will be then closer to the community and the way of implementing on the daily basis. So it's not just a big talk up there, but it's really activities on the ground with the consultation and with the involvement with local communities. And it's why I have seen now that the awareness and even the expectation of this Green Wall completed and make it happen is putting a lot of pressure to the head of state and to the international community, because communities, they will ask, they are questioning. We are talking about this Green Wall. You are saying that you are doing this project. Where is it? What is there for us? So it's a kind of bottom up, top up, and in the middle, I think we'll make it happen.
So I see this amazing initiative, almost like a wall of communities built around the natural restoration of the land and the trees. And I know there's involvement from all the countries in Africa that you've mentioned, but also there's an international support. What commitment are you receiving, and what support are you receiving from the global governments in support of this amazing project?
As a UNCCD, let's say that we are receiving a lot of support, and it can go back to since the creation of the Pan-African Agency, yeah, of the Great Green Wall, because we are asked to help them to strengthen their capacity. But we have seen most support from the One Planet Summit, where this mandate has been again renewed with a lot of financial support, but a lot of technical support also, to make sure that we will be making and working with the Pan-African agencies to strengthen them so that they will be the body to to fulfill the mandate they have created to fulfill. I'm saying this because you can create a body, but if you look into the context, and if the context has, like, for example, just simple infrastructures, like a speed internet, like computers, like a monitoring system, you have multiple projects going there, you want to make a kind of cohesion, comprehensive synergy, building from one to another, avoiding duplication, you will need a monitoring system. You need to track what is the stakeholders, what is the project on the ground, what is the involvement. And this is what we receive, like the support to provide to the Green World, to work with them, identify their needs, and make sure that they are fully strengthened to fulfill their mandate. So I can say that this is, and we are having, I can't say daily, but pressure is there. Where are you since January? Where is this online platform? Where is this monitoring? So, and I like this pressure because it keeps you awake. It keeps you realize that, okay, it's not just a project I'm doing, and then you have to deliver. You have to think about the community which depend on that. You have to see how this agency can really be what it should be with all the full capability to deliver.
What can our listeners do to help the project?
Lot.
That's good. We need to know.
First, I think that we all have a role to play. And I can't, when I say that the Green World is old idea, till to date, there are a lot of people who didn't know or don't know what is the Green World. So it's why I appreciate you to try to get information and put the information, but the right information out there. So our listeners, I think the first thing is to look for the information, to know also that each of us, at our level, we have a role to play. Land degradation, pollution, this insecurity, they don't seek passport or visa to travel. If we have, if we don't fix the root cause on this problem in this region, we are all suffering, and I think we are seeing it now. It's not only Europe, but migration is everywhere. If these communities, the root cause is not addressed, you cannot sleep peacefully. Because even if it's within the same country, you can have some kind of rays of thief, rays of insecurity. You will lock your doors and everything, but you are not secure because people out there are hungry and don't have something to eat. I'm not saying that, okay, when we fix all this will disappear, but it will reduce. So our listener can help by playing their part, by looking for the information, by trying to see, because we all have our network. We all have our community. We all have our next. If we spread the right information within that, I think a lot of people will know and get involved. Further, if you are in, if one of the listeners is at or are in the 11 countries which are part of the Pan-African Agency, I really invite them to get in touch with the local Green World committees so that they can play a role, because there are a lot of things to do. Just awareness raising or be involved on how to help change the situation within the country. So this is something they can do.
Fantastic. So as we get close to the end of our talk together, we ask some standard questions to all of our guests. So understanding the climate emergency, what keeps you up at night?
Yeah. Let's say that when you think about the urgency, you think about the community or the population which are suffering for the climate change, not maybe the people who are sitting and saying, okay, it's too hot, do I need the IC? No. I'm talking about the people who, because of this fact of the climate change, they cannot produce, they lost everything. Mm. When you think about the fact that this is a situation where we do have tools, where we do have political will, where we know that we can reverse the situation because you can restore the land more easily and with the cost effective. Mm-hmm. So it's really a pill of, it has to be urgently act now.
Yeah.
So this can keep you awake. Knowing the problem, absolutely, knowing that you absolutely have the solution, knowing that action has to be done like yesterday and speed on that.
Yeah. Absolutely. So to turn it around slightly then, what aspects make you optimistic for the future?
Yeah, I thought earlier that I'm really optimistic because of the political will which we have, the engagement of the international community, but also the raising of appetite from private sector, from civil society, from citizen science to work and change this. So hope is there. People are willing to do it. Just let act and do it.
Absolutely.
Not knowing everything about the project, although we've done our research thoroughly, we want to ask if by any chance we've missed an important question that we should have asked. Have we missed on any of the news or any of the parts of the project that is new to us and hasn't been out there on the website or on the media?
There's a lot on the media out there, but I think that it's an evolving project. We have the first initiative. We have the involvement of the Pan-African Agency. We have the accelerator where we are working, but there are other partners also very engaged, like the African Union, with other countries, not only the 11th, but the other countries, trying to see how this could be replicated in the other dry areas in Africa. But I think you have touched all the points. Just follow us because... just follow us because we are in the beginning of the accelerator and we are rushing and running to deliver what we need to.
So we can see that this project is just going to expand across Africa, and maybe from there on, being such an amazing example, it can expand into other continents as well, and be a success story everywhere else that's affected by this. And it'll be amazing if we can catch up later on to get more information about the new projects, the new Great Green Walls. Now, as a final question. And we always ask this advice from all of our guests. If there's anything that you could ask our listeners to do to help the planet, what would it be? How can we be good?
I will just say that when we see a problem or a challenge, try to put your feet in the shoes of the people living this problem. If it were me, what should I do? And I think when you start interesting the problem, you start also thinking of how can I help? Yeah. And we all have a role to play. Let's start from our where we can. There is a proverb in my language, we say, start sweeping in front of your hoods. When you finish that, you can do the other. But start from your level. There is no small level. There are no small action. If the aim is great, if the aim is big, if the aim is to change for a better environment. Because the action you are putting, when we connect the dots, it will lead us to a solution. So everyone can be good. Everyone can be involved. Just be part of it. Just see yourself that it's an environmental problem. An environmental problem is not a country ABC or a continent YXYZ problem. We have one planet. So when you have a problem somewhere, wait and see. Sooner or longer, you will feel it. Because I think even if you look into the Europe here sometime, you can see some dust coming, which years back you don't have. Yeah. So it's a cycle. It's a one planet. Let us hold hands and act.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Thank you so much for this. It's been a great honor to interview you and to learn about the project. And we're really looking forward to catching up soon and finding out more about it.
Thank you very much.
Thank
for your
you very much for your interest and your support to make the Great Green Wall happen. Thank you very much.
So this was Birgi Lamizana, Senior Project Manager for the UNCCD, the organization that's dealing with the Great Green Wall. We've actually recorded this episode on the Desertification and Drought Day on the 17th of June. And it completely merges with the project and the idea of why this project has been created. It is sad to hear and to understand how Birgi has gone through her childhood living in an amazing place, and to understand what she's seeing now, what's left of the place.
Well, just that there's no streams, there's no rivers there, it's not sustainable anymore.
The wildlife is gone and it's a complete complete disaster. So this project is an amazing opportunity to bring all that back to life and to actually just create a sustainable way of living for the population remaining there.
Absolutely. And it's not just about, say, planting trees or what other single point. This is a whole community coming together, both on the ground and afar, to create this amazing change and rewilding to a degree of their area to make it sustainable again, to bring it back to what it was.
And I think, as it was described before, this is a puzzle. The trees are a major part of it, but there's more pieces to the puzzle that will need to be added. They are added. They will involve human development, social development, looking at all green energy, businesses and conservation. So it's an amazing opportunity to get involved if you want to. If you are in Africa, as Birgi said, please contact them directly and volunteer, be part of the team on the ground. They need people there to help manage the whole process. I know we have listeners in Africa, so please follow the links on our page and join us.